Hello, this is Rabbi Gideon Rothstein, and I'm here with a responsum a day. Today is the first day of this series. It is for the 7th of Sivan, which, if you live outside of Israel, is Chag. I am recording it ahead of time. If you live in Israel, you can hear it. If you live outside of Israel, you can hear it afterwards. But let me briefly introduce the idea. We will, five times a week, be studying a responsum written on that day of the Hebrew calendar. So today we are going to study a tshuva of the Tzitz Eliezer. Eliezer Yehuda Waldenberg was an important posek in the 20th century in Eretz Yisrael. He was the Rav of Shari. He was the posek for Shari Tzedek. He has many medical tshuvot. He has many other interesting tshuvot. He has a series of volumes called Tzitz Eliezer. This is from the 18th volume, Siman Yud Tet. It's a responsum. It's a question that was written to him by a Rav in Bnei Brak, a Rav Zilberstein, who had been asked a very terrible and hard and heart-rending question about how and when we have to treat or not treat people. It's from Tafshin Memchet, which was 1988. So that's the tshuva. So one of the advantages of this series, I hope, will be that we'll get to meet different mishivim, including especially people like Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Yosef, Rav Moshe Feinstein, who all put dates on their tshuvot. Not everybody always did. And that's the way we're going to find our tshuvot. And one last point. My point is not to say that these are always the halakha. Sometimes these poskim, as great as they were opposed by others, and not everything that we have here is necessarily the halakha, but these are certainly very important poskim whose opinion is worth taking into account, and I think it will be interesting, and I hope you will find it interesting to listen and to learn what these poskim have to say. In this case, the doctors wanted to know about a premature baby who was born at a very, very low birth weight. And the way to keep the baby alive, this premature baby, was by giving it copious amounts of oxygen. The problem was, this is apparently the state of medical care in 1988, problem was that in administering this oxygen, it was likely that the child would be left blind or with some kind of mental retardation, some kind of mental damage such that the child would not be able to grow and develop normally. And the parents did not want to treat the child, because to then be left with this child with serious medical issues his whole life, blindness and probably some kind of brain damage, they preferred to let what seemed like nature take its course, and they wanted to know if they had to treat, the doctors wanted to know if they had to treat the baby. The Rav in Bnei Brak had already answered, or was planning to answer, and he was checking with the Tzitz Eliezer as to whether his answer was the correct one, which is an important and interesting phenomenon to keep in mind, that even though this Rav is himself a reputable scholar, and we'll see that much of what he says Tzitz Eliezer will end up agreeing with, nonetheless, he felt the need to consult with the Tzitz Eliezer. So his idea was first to point out, and this is a broader issue to think about, and Tzitz Eliezer will go one way, and I'm not saying it's the only way to go, but it's something to think about. This Rav in Bnei Brak felt sure that if this were an adult, okay, so now leave aside the premature baby for a second, we'll come back to the premature baby, but if you had an adult who needs some kind of medical treatment, and without that medical treatment will pass away, right? He's in a mortal situation, will pass away without that treatment, and the treatment will blind the person and create brain damage. In other words, the same exact situation, but now let's apply it to an adult. The Rav was sure, and we'll see what Tzitz Eliezer says in a second, the Rav was sure that the adult is required to accept that treatment. In other words, the question of underlying this is, the question of what extent are we required to accept medical treatment when that treatment itself will create other problems. This Rav is sure that even if the medical treatment will create blindness and brain damage, the adult has to do it. Another question that comes up, this is all part of the question still, another question that comes up is, the doctors know of a young woman whose husband, sadly, had some situation. They don't describe what it was in the tshuva, but he become what people will sometimes call a vegetable. Basically meaning, although it's not clear in the responsum itself, whether he's in an irreversible coma is one kind of situation, or he had what we would tend today to think of as brain death, but whatever he was, he had been for 10 years. He had not, like, he'd been on life support and no consciousness that anybody could tell, and not moving. And then he had a heart attack. So he's in the long-term care unit, you know, wherever he is, and he hasn't had any movement or response in 10 years. You know, he's had whatever people have in that situation. Now he has a heart attack. And the doctors asked the young woman, the wife, if she wants them to resuscitate him. I mean, the heart attack they know how to deal with. And they want to know, is she required to? And if they do it, it could be that the man will live in this state for another 10 years, and she will be left really an aguna. An aguna in the classical sense of, she has a husband that she can't, in the classical sense, the husband disappeared. But here she'll have a husband, and she can't get divorced from him, and he's not. So what do they want to know? The rabbi said that he answered, yes, for sure. And the reason he gave is that the pasuk in the Torah that tells us that we're required to save lives is v'chai b'hem. V'chai b'hem says you have to live by them. So he holds, this Rav, when he's asking the question to Eliezer, it wasn't said only about people who are conscious and people who have, you know, intelligence in the way that we would think of intelligence or the ability to function in life. The way it would function in life. And if that means that this poor woman is left in this state for a long time, it's very sad. We have all the rahmanas in the world for her. We have all of the compassion that we can have. But and even though it might mean, this Rav points out, it might mean that she'll never be able to get married again, or not be able to get married again at a stage where she could ever have children. So that's what he held about the adult cases. So if you have an adult who has a medical condition and needs treatment, and the treatment itself might lead to blindness and even brain damage, he holds you have to take it. If you have a man who is in a vegetative state, that's probably the better word for it, vegetative state, has been there for 10 years, might be there for another 10 years, the doctors don't have any reason to think he's going to leave this vegetative state, nonetheless thinks you have to treat other problems that come up, even if that means that somebody else will have their lives certainly put on hold, if not ruined by it. When it came to the premature baby, though, so if it was born before 6 months, this Rav is now saying to the Tzitz Eliezer, week 22 or 23, so the Gemara seems to hold that a baby that's born before 7 months is like nothing, meaning that we don't think it'll have any chance of living whatsoever in the Gemara's time, and that has two applications or two issues that we'll see. There's this one of whether or not we're required to try to save the baby's life. Then the other one is whether we're allowed to violate Shabbat to save the baby's life. Meaning we violate Shabbat for people, for lives, right? For children, for babies. But this, halakhically, there are some kinds of babies that are born that don't reach that standard because they have they are not seen as having enough of a chance to live. So the question is, with this premature baby, step one is, are we required to treat the baby? So this Rav is saying, I don't know about week 22 or 23, if the same thing happened. Meaning the Rav seemed to feel like if the baby's born after 8.5 months, and unfortunately something went wrong, or 7.5 months, something went wrong and the baby needs lots of oxygen, and the oxygen is going to lead to the baby having brain damage and blindness or some combination of that, and in a sad way. Question one is, are the parents required to? There he seemed to think that yes. But if it's early enough in the sense that too early, it's 22 or 23 weeks, question one is, he's not sure if the parents are required to. And then in the reverse, let's suppose the parents are on the other side of the question. The parents say, well, this is what Hashem gave us. This is what we have. We want this baby. Please do whatever you can to save the baby. Even though the baby might not be able to function, right? Might be blind is one problem, but even worse than that, might be a shote. And by a shote, we mean might have such severe brain damage that they really can't do anything. So are we allowed to violate Shabbat to save this baby? And the standard the Rav gave is that the possibilities are 10%. A baby at 23 weeks and weighing less than a kilogram, which is 2.2 pounds, weighing less than a kilo, so around 2 pounds or less, and at 23 weeks, the baby can't live, or it's a 10% chance of the baby leaving. Are we allowed to violate Shabbat for that child? Now, that 10% issue is worth paying attention to, because the reason he's naming that number is because that's the standard at which he thinks that it's clear that halacha, and the Tzitz Eliezer will agree, that halacha sees this as a very small minority of cases. And when we talk about majority and minority, that can be something like 60-40. But when it's only 10% that it'll occur, that's a very small minority. That's an issue that I think comes up in many, many contexts, political context, medical context, halakhic context, and it's worth paying attention to. That if the chances are 10% of something, how much are we supposed to worry about that? Now, if it's a good thing that might happen 10% of the time, that's one situation. If it's a bad thing that might happen 10% of the time, that's the situation. So worth thinking about that as a general question. In our situation, that gets into the way of, or in the, it puts us into the problem of, whether we're allowed to violate Shabbat where we do want to take action. So, last piece of the question is, the Chazon Ish said, that if the baby's born after 8 months, so the Gemara says very clearly that a baby that's born after only 8 months cannot live. Gemara understood that babies can be born after 9 months and live, or sometimes a baby can be born after 7 months. It's called nolad lemikuta'im. It was born after an abbreviated gestation period, but that after 7 months it could live. And then the Gemara felt, this is very clear on the Gemara, that after 7 months, in the process of becoming full term, to go from 7 months to 9 months, something happens in the process such that an 8 month baby could not live. Such as the Gemara said very clearly, one could not violate Shabbat to save an 8 month baby. Chazon Ish had already said, and this is widely accepted as far as I know, that today it doesn't seem to work that way. Whatever the Gemara was talking about, whatever the Gemara meant about their babies, we can't go back and see, we don't know. But whatever they meant, it's not true today, and therefore, if somebody gives birth to a baby after 8 months, and there's every reason to think the baby can live, we will do all that which we can, and therefore, we won't treat it in the way the Gemara said, and we will violate Shabbat to help that baby, and we'll try to keep that baby alive. Okay, so the Rav says, maybe that's true today of the babies at 24 weeks or 23 weeks, because now, you could have said it two ways. He's saying it as, because maybe the nature of such babies is getting better. I might say, because medical care is getting better. Either way, once you have a 10% chance of life, so maybe that's enough that you can violate Shabbat. Especially since the Be'er Halacha had said that if the baby's only a Safek Ben Chet, Be'er Halacha was written by the Mishnah Berura, and so the Chofetz Chaim, who's you know, a bunch of years before the Chazon Ish, he had said that if you're not sure that it's an 8 month baby, he wasn't yet ready to say, or he hadn't thought of it, or however it worked out, he wasn't ready to say that we don't have to pay attention to the Gemara's saying that an 8 month baby will live, it won't live. But we can say that if we're not positive it's an 8 month baby, and very often you're not positive because you don't always know exactly when conception happened. So if you're not positive it's an 8 month baby, he said you're allowed to assume that it's not, and therefore you're allowed to violate Shabbat. So if that's true, then at 24 weeks, 23 weeks, maybe you say the same thing. We're not sure it's 24, 23 weeks, so maybe therefore we should be allowed to violate Shabbat. But on the other hand, if it's a 23-week, 24-week baby, maybe that's not yet enough, such that if the parents want to refrain from administering medical care for the reasons we discussed, that the medical care isn't going to have all of the effects that we would like. The medical care, as far as we know, is going to have some negative effects. Maybe in that situation, it would be acceptable to allow the parents to refrain from administering medical care. So that's the question. Question was sent to the Tzitz Eliezer, is dated Yom HaMiyuchas of Tavshin Memchet. Yom HaMiyuchas is the second of Sivan. Why is it called Yom HaMiyuchas? Because the first day of Sivan is Rosh Chodesh. That's a special day in Halacha. And then days 3, 4, and 5 are Shloshet Yimei Hagbalah, are the 3 days before the giving of the Torah. And then the sixth of Sivan is already Shavuot. So the second day, which is an in-between day with nothing doing it, that's called the Yom HaMiyuchas. So that was sent then. Tzitz Eliezer answers a few days later. He answers the second day, what we call the second day of Shavuot. He's living in Israel, so it's not a day of Chag. So on the seventh of Sivan, he answers to this Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, who is the Rav of Shkunat Ramat Elchanan Bnei Brak. When it comes to the first question, he says he agrees completely with the Rav, the Rav of Zilberstein, that if you have an adult whose life is in danger, he's required to accept all medical treatment regardless of the consequences of that medical treatment. He points out the Be'er Halacha says that this is true even if it's going to only extend his life for a few moments. We would do it on Shabbos. Right? So, but he, the Be'er Halacha, had not said if they're going to cause damage. Be'er Halacha also says, let's say you have a cheresh or a shote. So you might think, a cheresh is in Halacha a deaf mute. And in Halacha, today, it's a little more complicated. But in Halacha, a deaf mute is not seen as a full adult because of the problems in communication and our understanding what they understand, what they don't understand. And a shote is somebody who's not in their right mind. Usually, that's thought of as being an insanity issue, but it also applies to some extent, and this is also sets of halakhic questions that have to be taken each on their own, but it also applies to people who are not, who don't have their full mental capacities. What the definition of full mental capacities is also something that would need to be checked. But in those situations, the Be'er Halacha says, though, you shouldn't think that just because these people are halakhically considered not full adults in the sense that they're not, for example, fully obligated in mitzvot. So where this comes up in a simple situation is, let's say you have somebody who sadly has Down syndrome, and therefore they're really not able, different people with Down syndrome have different conditions. I'm not generalizing about that. Let's say we have somebody with Down syndrome or some worse form of mental handicap, and therefore they're not really able to keep up with things. So we don't say about such a person that they're obligated in mitzvot the way that anybody else is obligated in mitzvot. And that's what the Gemara says. These people are not obligated in mitzvot. Shouldn't think, the Be'er Halacha says, that that means that they're also not full adults in the sense that, God forbid, if somebody kills such a person, it doesn't qualify as full murder. Of course it qualifies as full murder. And also, we have every right to violate Shabbat to save these lives as well. So for all that Halacha rules that they are not full adults, it doesn't mean they're not full adults in the sense of violating Shabbat. Of course it means that. And it doesn't mean that if somebody were to kill them, for which is a terrible thing and would be usher completely, doesn't mean that there's any lesser problem with killing such people. So you can have a status of a person who's not a full adult and yet counts as a full human being for lots of other purposes. So that's the first step. But that doesn't yet, the Tzitzit Ezra points out, that doesn't yet tell us that one is required to heal such people. Meaning, let's suppose somebody, and here it's going to be even more so, that the person is right now not in that situation. It's one thing to tell me, you have somebody who their whole lives has been a cheresh, a deaf mute, or their whole lives has been a shoteh, has been somebody not in their right mind in any of the possible ways that one can be not in your right mind, to say that that's who they are, that's who God made them, and we save their lives, and we don't, clearly don't kill them, and we save their lives, and we violate Shabbat to save their lives, that's not the same thing as saying if you have somebody who's lived their lives as, whatever the word normal means, but as a general adult, obligated in mitzvot, let's say, their whole lives, and then comes a situation where to take a method of healing, to take a medication, to take an operation, to take a procedure, will sadly lead them to become a person like that, or blindness, or brain damage, in all those situations, that's not the same thing to say that that a person would be required to accept such healing, to accept such medical interventions to do such a thing. So he says that's not nearly as clear, and he says, one of the reasons that we obligate people to save people's lives, there's v'chai b'hem, but another one, which he discussed in another tshuva, I should mention that aside from the tshuvot that we're going to be doing here that I do orally, I also usually write up a summary of one tshuva a week, and I post it on TorahMusings.com. I also send it out to an email list, which somebody can get onto if they just want to email me at GROTHST, my first initial, Gidon, G, and then the first letters of my last name, Rothstein, R-O-T-H-S-T, @gmail.com. I can put you on that email list. So I write up one tshuva a week, usually a tshuva that's for that week's Shabbos. But recently there was one about, so the answer was talking about the fact that we are obligated to save others' lives, and it's an extension of the obligation of Hashevoto lo. It's an extension of our obligation to return lost objects. Because the obligation to return lost objects in Halacha applies not only to money and not only to objects, but it applies to the person's health. In this situation, the Tzitzit Ezra points out, I'm not really returning his health if I do this medical procedure for this person. The doctors do this because we're not returning their actual health, returning a piece of their health. And so too, the Tzitzit Ezra says, you can argue that it's not v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha means we should love our fellow Jew as our fellow as ourselves. And many people wouldn't want this medical intervention, wouldn't want to end up blind and or brain damaged, even if it would leave them with some life. So that's, Jesus is grabbing the exact question. He's going to come down on it in a second, but let's just pause and note the question that he's raising. It's one thing to say that I'm required to accept, that every person is required to accept all the medical care that doctors think is necessary for them. That's true if that care is going to restore them to some version of health. But it's going to restore them to a version of a person that many, many people would never want to be if they were given the choice. That's a little more complicated, and it's not as clear because of the sources and the ideas that underlie the saving of lives. Nonetheless, Lahalacha, Rav Tzitzit agrees with Zilberstein, and he holds that yes, the person is required to do that. And now his proof of that is very interesting, or his support for that is very interesting. His support for that is, he quotes a tshuva of Rav Yaakov Emden's from Mor Uktzia. That's the volume, one of the volumes of Tshuvot that Rav Yaakov Emden wrote. Rav Yaakov Emden was an 18th century, very well-known Rav in Posek. He's the son of the Chacham Tzvi. He's usually probably best known for a controversy he had with Yonatan Eibschitz, which we don't have to talk about right now. In any case, in Mor Uktzia, Orach Chaim, Shin Chafchet, 328, Morxia says that if a doctor is trying to deal with a person who's in trouble, he's got some illness, and he knows, the doctor is confident there is a well-known, well-accepted medical intervention that will save somebody's life, right? We always, or that will work, however it will work, usually to save somebody's life, but we always require the person who is ill to accept that intervention. That's an important, important halakhic idea, right? People are not allowed to just give up on their health and say, well, I don't want this anymore. If there is an intervention that will heal them, that will lead to healing, they're required to accept it. And that's even true if it involves amputation, right? So a simple example would be gangrene. Let's say somebody says gets gangrene, God forbid, in their foot. And the only way that they can live, because gangrene spreads unless you catch it, and that's what the white doctors amputate. So they amputate the body part, and that stops the gangrene from spreading, and then the person lives, but they live without a limb. There are people who might say they don't want to live that way. They prefer to die than to live without a limb. So that in halacha, and here I think it's pretty clear that everybody agrees to this, that in halakha is not seen as an acceptable response, that the amputation of a limb is something that we're required to accept if we're positive and if we know or confident that it's going to lead to saving the person's life. So that's it to the Ezra. And the reason the Morxiet says is, the reason is because our lives are not our own to just choose when we want to live and when we don't want to live. We're not allowed to commit suicide. In the same way, we're not allowed to forego a clear medical intervention that would help us, that would help us to live. And Murkia says we're even allowed to do it against the will of the patient. Now, how this works in America with the laws is a different question, and the balance between doing what Allah says and what the law of the land says is always something you have to keep in mind. But fundamentally, that's what the Murkia says. And then the Tzitzilezer says, and the same thing is true here for this adult person, even if it's going to lead to blindness and or brain damage. So he knows that some people might say, well, but there, the body part that's being taken off can be considered a rodef. In fact, that it's the body part itself that's causing the problem. So you could say that's why you're required to do it, because you're required to save somebody's life by getting rid of those things that are chasing them. But in the case of the administering of oxygen that's going to cause brain damage or blindness, the eyes that are going to be blinded or the brain that's going to be hurt are not doing anything right now to the person. It's just that we're administering a medication, we're administering some treatment that's going to cause it. So he recognizes that he doesn't really accept that as an idea, but he adds that the Ramban says that even though, he says it in Torah to Adam, even though in their time bloodletting was considered a valid medical intervention, even though bloodletting can sometimes cause danger, the Ramban says, nonetheless, you have to accept it because that's the medical care of their time, and it very often produces healing, which shows that even if the application of the medicines, he holds, the Ramban, and it's still learning from that, that even if the application of the medicine causes some kinds of problems, we nonetheless have to accept it. And the Tzitz Eliezer sees that as relevant to the Rav Yaakov Emden situation and to our situation, right? And he adds, the Ramban says that all medication has some kind of danger to them, and nonetheless, we're required to accept medical treatment to heal ourselves. Now, I am not one to question the Tzitz Eliezer when he's not around. I'm not one to disagree with the Tzitz Eliezer. But nonetheless, I think that one could wonder whether or not he's grasped the question fully. We'll see in a second that he holds, and he's going to agree with Zilberstein, that life is life, and we don't make judgments about that. And that also underlies it, that for him, fundamentally, losing a limb to amputation, right, or running the danger of bloodletting or other medical, dangerous medical treatments in the hope of healing is the exact same thing as running the risk of brain damage. And I think that that's a question that one could raise, whether that's necessarily true. That there might be a difference between us rejecting the claim, well, I don't want to live without a leg, and us rejecting the claim as opposed to the claim of, I don't want to live if I'm going to be unable to, whatever it is that the brain damage will cause. So I think those are interesting questions to raise, but this is his view. And that comes up now. And he thinks, therefore, that with a premature baby, let's say, of not the 24, 23 weeks one, we'll get back to that in a second, but with a general premature baby, an 8-month baby, let's say, he thinks we have to also, in the same way, administer the medical treatment, and the parents don't have the right to turn it down. About the woman whose husband is in a vegetative state, so he thinks the same thing is true, that since we are required to try to save lives, we have to try to save this person's life as well, even though, and now here it gets an interesting question. The Tzitz Eliezer says he knows doctors who will tell you that such people can only live, come back to life by a miracle. But they can't tell you there's nothing going on in their minds right now, and they can't tell you it won't happen, because he says there have been cases of people who have been in these kinds of states for long periods of time, and they eventually come back to themselves, and they eventually return to life. So that's a set of questions that comes up very often in the context of the question of brain death. Right? There are those post-game who had held, who had wanted to say that brain death is an acceptable standard in halacha to say the person is already dead, because they'll never come back. Now, brain death is different than irreversible coma or permanent vegetative state. There's all these medical issues that I'm not going to get into, but the Tzitz Eliezer's perspective is that since we can't know that the person won't come back to life, because in situations like this, and he'll tell you, we don't know which or which as fully as people like to claim that we do, and therefore, since in situations like this, it's possible to come back to life in some way, and more than that, since there is life here, in the sense of there's just life here, there's breathing, there's respiration, there's this, as long as there's life support, we're not allowed to refrain from helping such a person. And I think that's an important standard also to wonder about, right? It would be one thing to say, we're not allowed to remove the life support. That's one standard. The next standard is, if some other medical issue arises, those are saying, we are required to deal with that issue to save the person's life and keep them alive. And in this extreme case, that's also producing this very negative effect on this woman, but nonetheless, in all these situations, there does come down on the side of the Rav, Rabbi Zilberstein, and says, yes, it's true. We hold that you have to save this life, because we always have to save lives, even in this situation. And this woman, as sad as it is for her, pikuach nefesh, saving lives, pushes it aside, and she has to accept what God has sent to her, and it's just the way it works out, and she has to work with that, as we all often have to work with things that happen in our lives. I'm not saying it's the only way to see the issue. I am saying this is the way that Tzitz Eliezer sees the issue. Very briefly, on the last question, that once he brought up the question of the premature baby, he now turns to the 23, 22, 23 week issue. And he says there, that's a harder question, because in the case where there's only a 10% chance of the baby staying alive, he's not sure there's enough life there that we're allowed to violate Shabbos to save the baby's life. And he points out somebody else who held that way, in terms of a 6-month baby, a baby born at 24 weeks, it would be, that even though nowadays the medical care has gotten better and babies survive more often, it's nonetheless such a small chance that we're not allowed to violate Shabbos for that baby. He thinks once the baby has lived 30 days, then you would be allowed to, because living 30 days is proof of life in halakha in that sense. On the other hand, if we have some reason to think the baby is born at such a stage that this particular baby has a better chance of staying alive. So at that point, he would think that you would have the right to. And Stiglitz adds, and if medical care gets better such that the odds go up, then you would have the right to. So to close up for today, because I'm going to try to generally keep this to around the half an hour. Today I'm a little bit over, but I'll try to keep it to half an hour. Well, halachos that Stiglitz has pointed out are, when there's life, we're required to save life. And in Stiglitz's view, that applies to life, even if the life will involve even a vegetative state, let alone brain damage. That means, therefore, we have to do all interventions necessary to maintain life. And that will include if the interventions themselves will cause damage, such as, God forbid, blindness, amputation, and even brain damage. That's true for adults. That's true for people. That's true for babies, even if they're somewhat premature, but they're at a stage of life when it's very likely they're going to live. The exception might be a baby that's born so premature, 22, 23 weeks, that the medical care would suggest, medical statistics would suggest, they only have a 10% chance of living there. The chances are so small that the teacher seems to think not only might the parents be allowed to choose not to treat, but even more than that, it might be that the parents, that we're not allowed to treat that child, on that baby on Shabbos, try to keep it alive until the baby itself has shown its life by living for 30 days. So these are some important complex medical issues. We will strive for a variety of issues. But that was for today, the seventh day of Sivan, the Tzitz Eliezer, on the question of saving and continuing life. Have a good day.